Support for the Media Project comes from the College of St. Rose, Albany, New York, offering a Master of Arts in Communications to advance careers in media, PR, and journalism. Fuller part-time options, 518-454-5143. From Northeast Public Radio, this is the Media Project, a weekly discussion about issues confronting the media.
Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score, killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They wallow in corruption, crime, and gore. Ting-a-ling-ling, city desk, pull the press, extra, extra, read all about it, it's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the press.
An opportunity for a half hour of commentary, analysis, and if we're lucky, a little insight into the media issues of the week. This is the Media Project from Albany, New York, Northeast Public Radio Studios. Dr. Alan Shartok is our host. Sir.
I thought when you said come, I thought you were going to say a half an hour of comedy.
Commentary, not comedy. Yeah. Dr. Alan Shartok, the CEO of Northeast Public Radio, right here next to him in the next microphone over is Ira Fussfeld, longtime publisher of the Daily Freeman in Kingston, New York.
I think, sadly, many of the listeners may feel we're doing comedy even when we're not attempting to do comedy.
Yes. Yeah, that's true. Hard to tell. And I'm Rex Smith, editor
especially
of the Times Union. Yeah.
Who are you? I don't know. A lot of people think, gee, that Alan, he's awfully funny. I said, well, you know.
Especially you guys.
I laugh,
go
I cry.
Ahead. You were going to say?
You
were introducing yourself.
I had. Thank you.
You did that already?
I did that already. You missed it. You know, it's important to listen as well as talk.
You are so right.
Well, you have a short name, though. One syllable for first and last name.
Yeah. Each. Mm-hmm. Well, we can do that. So this is a big Trump. This is a big Trump day, that is, in terms of our commentary here, because we had not, at the time of our last show, had an opportunity to really analyze how the Fox News-Donald Trump relationship is going. And it seems to be quite remarkable because, of course, what we saw in the debate a couple of weeks ago was Trump being rather, is it fair to say, eviscerated by questioning? I don't know.
Not necessarily more so than anybody else, despite his protestations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Nor, Ira, has there been any, or Rex, has there been any real evidence that despite his foolery, that he's gone down in the Republican polls.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, an interesting question. First, before we even get to what he thinks, how do we feel about the performance of the Fox News hosts in hosting the first debate?
I'm going to take a contrarian view. Ira, you go first.
Well, you know, I've already said on this air that I was pleasantly surprised to see that the Fox News anchors asked pointed and difficult questions. I certainly didn't expect it. And so they deserve credit for it, in my view. And they purported themselves very well. And as I said, it wasn't just Trump who, you know, their slings and arrows were pointed at virtually everybody on that stage.
Yeah, but Megyn Kelly went first and foremost with Trump. And I think that she was being very assertive with him, and probably so, I guess. But he was first, and she was very tough on him. And that's what happened.
Well, actually, the first question was Bret Baier's question, where he asked to raise hands who was not ruling out a third-party run, and Trump was the only one who did that. So
Come on, you're just saying this because your son works for Fox.
No, he's actually pointing out fact.
And by the way, he writes for a sitcom in Hollywood.
Not quite the same as Fox News, right?
Same.
But, you know, I have a somewhat of a different point of view. I think that it's true that the questions were more potent than people would have expected from the network that announced itself, that is specifically designed to be biased, that is Fox News. Their founding principles are biased.
Right.
Notwithstanding their slogan.
Not by their definition.
Well, yeah. No, they say we want to give a conservative slant to the news, and that is what they think is truth rather than anyway.
Right. So you get this big fight between Roger Ailes.
No,
right?
Hold on, Alan.
Okay, hold on, Alan.
But I'm in the middle of making a point.
Oh, I
forgive me.
No,
see, that's why I say it's important to listen as well.
All right.
But the point that
this is the comedy part of the show.
Ha 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 ha!
Go ahead.
Where was I?
Were you in English class the day they discussed what a period does?
No. Okay. I just use a lot of semicolons. But the fact is, here's my point. Debates are actually staged by candidates. That is, they rehearse their lines over and over with their handlers. Their staff advises them on specific phrasing. They memorize their lines so that they can give the right answers they want to give to the questions they know are coming. And so it seems to me, especially in devising a format in which you had 1 minute answers allowed of each of the candidates and maybe 30 seconds more if the moderators say that they're allowed, these candidates were basically given an opportunity to give their stock responses. And each of the questions that were served up by these very friendly, smiling Fox anchors in this gladiatorial setting, which had more of the earmarks of a sports event than political, these were giving the candidates an opportunity to give their stock responses, letting them tossing up the balls that these guys knew were going to be put out there so that they could practice their lines. And I guarantee these lines are going to get better as the season goes along. But I don't think that what the Fox hosts did was so astonishing. It was simply what a journalist is supposed to be doing, you know, ask the questions that are most obvious out there, right?
Well, maybe it's astonishing because our regard for Fox was such that we didn't expect that they would go that route, and we expected really softball questions. And these, for better or worse, were not softball questions, in my view.
But now we have...
Yeah, and also, I'm sorry, it was the first debate. You had 10 people on the stage, not counting those who were in the other debate. And there are going to be other debates both on Fox and elsewhere. And so it just seemed to me that this sort of set the groundwork because there was precious little, no matter how much you liked or disliked the questions, there was precious little debating. You know, other than a couple of the sidebars where Rand Paul got into it with Christie or Rand Paul got into it with Trump, there was very little debating with each other. And I think that was a byproduct of the number of people on the stage.
Well, we're giving out Academy Awards to the folks who are asking the questions, but I think the big issue here, and I think Rex was going to raise it with us, is the relationship between Roger Ailes, Megyn Kelly, and Trump. Now, we all know that the big issue here is that, as Rex said, Fox was designed to be a voice for the right. Oh, we're so surprised. Rupert Murdoch has the Fox News outlets. He also has the New York Post. Which part of this don't we know? All right. But that's his group. Those are his listeners. Those are the people he wants to attract, the right-wing crowd. He gets them, and there's no question he's been successful at that. Who does he appoint? He appoints the robust, you know, Roger Ailes to handle the whole thing. But Roger Ailes now has to worry because Trump has attacked Megyn Kelly in the worst kind of ways, saying that basically because she was having a period, she was, you know, after him. I mean, it was a terrible, stupid attack by Trump. But where was Ailes, the question now becomes, in terms of negotiating with Trump so that Trump didn't pick up his marbles and walk away with all of those viewers.
Yeah,
that's the big issue.
I think this is the most fascinating part of the whole Trump campaign. And maybe
that's why I raised it, Robert.
Okay, but here let's just set a groundwork. I think it's safe to say that you two guys have had an experience, I certainly have, and as have most editors and publishers or radio, TV executives, where a politician or maybe an advertiser will come to you, usually in person, sometimes on the phone, and lodge a complaint and threaten to take his business elsewhere, or a politician threaten never to speak to your people again. And the standard response, I think, among all of us, and again, stop me if I'm wrong, is if you will certainly look into it, look into the allegations. More often than not, you're going to find that the allegations are not true. And you're going to say to this person or people, okay, we're doing it the way we know we're supposed to do it. If you don't want to talk to us, fine. If you don't want to advertise with us, fine. We have integrity. This is what we do. There is a question now in my mind, because we're seeing conflicting reports, about whether Roger Ailes, in fact, caved in to Trump, or whether, in the most recent reporting that I've seen, he basically said, we resolve this now or we go to war. And he did, in fact, say what I think he should have said immediately when Trump started lodging his complaints. And one other point, I was surprised to read, if it's accurate, that Ailes initiated the phone call to Trump to tell him, stop doing this stuff. I don't recall ever making the phone call to the politician who's complaining. We're going to do what we do. If he complains, I'll take his call. But I don't go scared that I'm afraid that as a result of this guy boycotting us, it's going to hurt our franchise.
Well, first of all, those were the days before newspapers.
Well, then let's stick with Fox News. Fox News is the 1,000-pound gorilla, so they should have no worries about Trump not showing up.
But Roger Ailes is, in his own way, a genius. Some would say an evil genius, but he is a genius at having made this network work. Now, there is this relationship between Trump and Ailes in which they duke it out. We heard several different reports, depending on who you were listening to, as to whether Ailes apologized, whether or not there was a détente or not. It turns out now that there wasn't. You are absolutely right, Ira.
There was not?
That's right.
I don't know that that's the case. I mean, you have a situation where...
I don't know that I was done with my
Trump
sentence.
Goes, taking another breath with commas there. You know, we have to put in periods, as somebody once said to me. Trump goes back on the air on a Fox show on Fox and Friends, and the co-host Steve Doocy says, "I'm glad we're friends again." And Trump says, "We've always been friends." That's inappropriate. You don't have a journalist opening an interview with a politician saying, "Oh, we're friends." Friends. Isn't that nice?
By the way, Rex, I want to compliment you on that insight because you're right. And I'm glad you interrupted me.
Good. Well, thank you very much.
We can do that more often if you'd like.
Well, in your case, it's impossible. Go ahead.
But here's the point that this is actually, I think, what you were going at, because here's what Ira referred to. Ailes' office called Trump's office. And the quote that the reporter Brian Stelter attributes to Ailes. Supposedly, what Ailes said to Trump is, "We can resolve this now or we can go to war." Well, that is an inappropriate way for a journalist to behave. You don't say to somebody, "We can go to war." You know, the facts are the facts. You report what it is. You don't go at somebody because you're mad at them.
What, you live in La La Land?
No, I live in the reality of ethical journalism.
But we don't know what, if that is an accurate quote, resolve, we don't know what resolve mean. We don't know what agreement was reached or if, in fact, Ailes did what I would have liked to have seen him do, which is to say to Trump, "We're going to do it our way. If you want to be on our air, we're more than welcome to have you on our air. If you don't want to be on our air, recognize that by not being on our air, look at how many millions of people you're no longer going to have access to. And if that's the way you want it, fine." We don't know that he said that. I certainly hope he said that. We don't know what brought him, whether Trump, you know, got his bluster off and now is just going to quietly continue, continue to be on Fox and make it look like he got his way. I mean, here's the guy who said he fired Roger Stone and then we find he didn't fire Roger Stone. You may go now. You didn't raise your hand. I didn't know you wanted to speak.
Okay. So part of this is a journalistic problem for the Media Project in that there's been a lot of leaking here, obviously, right? In other words, Ailes' guy comes out and says, "This is what Ailes said," because Ailes has got a big problem. He's been attacked vigorously by people who think that he has not been behaving, as you guys have insinuated. He's not been behaving ethically for a journalist. So now he's got to worry about that, and I think he sends his guy out or somebody out, and they say, "Roger said, if you don't do this, then we're going to be at war."
Here's the thing that interests me. Reportedly, in the wake of the debate and the whole Megyn Kelly controversy, Fox was flooded with negative comments from their core viewers who were angry at Fox and angry at Megyn Kelly. And was that volume of complaints significant enough for Roger Ailes to be nervous about the underlying strength of the Fox News Channel going forward? It amazes me if, in fact, he was worried. It's hard to imagine because, if for no other reason, if the people who watch Fox are right-leaning, conservative people and are unhappy with this particular instance, and they say, "We're not going to watch Fox anymore," where are they going to go? They're not going to go to MSNBC. They're not going to go to CNN. They watch Fox because of all that Fox entails, the right-wing point of view. Why isn't Roger Ailes, and maybe he did, sticking to his guns and saying, "We're bigger than you are, Donald Trump"?
Well, the interesting, I think, what it ends up with everything is, at the end of the day, it was the biggest audience that a presidential debate in primary season has ever seen, 24 million viewers. and Megyn Kelly's star remains ascendant, even if she is now the devil in the eyes of some Trump supporters. She is increasingly the biggest star of Fox. Her name is out there even bigger among people who had never seen her before. Graduate of suburban area Albany High School and Bethlehem High School and Albany Law School. And yes, indeed, grew up here. And so, you know, a local, but it is an interesting notion of the celebrity of TV anchors, which, you know, always kind of ticks off those of us in the print media.
Well, you know, it's interesting because it's interesting because somebody played for me the other day an interview from several years ago between Megyn Kelly and Howard Stern.
Uh-huh.
And it was very sexually oriented in terms of, you know, her satisfaction and all the rest of it. I don't think the Megyn Kelly we're seeing now, people evolve, you know.
Yes, they do.
I don't think the Megyn Kelly we're seeing now would have anything to do with that kind of nonsense.
Well, just some of the photo shoots she did just a couple of years ago were quite provocative.
You know, I was going to mention it, and I wasn't sure what I saw on the internet was not doctored. So those were really pictures of her. Interesting.
Mm-hmm. Well, we'll hear a lot more on that, and we will see. What we do know is the next Republican presidential debate next month is going to be on CNN. It will be more boring. We can predict that.
Well, maybe
safely.
Not, because now, and I'm interested to see, A, whether CNN will feel the need to ask questions as pointedly as Fox. And not only that, I'm interested to see what kind of questioning the Democrats are going to get when they finally debate. And their debates, none of their debates are going to be on Fox. They're all going to be
their
elsewhere.
Candidates aren't as interesting. The Democratic candidates are not as much fun as these Republicans. You know, you got Roly-Poly over on one side, and you've got...
I thought he was the head of Fox.
Anyway, it's going to be...
Well,
I'm
but will they ask, you know, will they ask, we don't know where the email matter will be by the time the Democrats debate, but will they ask those kinds of questions of Hillary as opposed to necessarily what's your opinion on foreign policy?
I want to register for comment here. I do want to say we're getting a lot of mail here at Public Radio that we're not doing enough to cover Bernie Sanders.
I'm shocked to hear that Public Radio listeners think that they don't hear enough
Bernie
Sanders.
We're not doing enough to cover Bernie Sanders. Now, I can only say I think we do a lot, but here's Bernie Sanders without a lot of money and now running ahead as we see the polls this very morning, we're talking of Hillary Clinton in New Hampshire, doing very well in Iowa. And this, again, may be a sort of populi revolution against the news media, as many people see it, both with Trump and Sanders, saying, we're not going to buy your tripe anymore. We're going to make up our own minds.
Well, this could be. Maybe all the political pros are wrong who say that they're two of a kind, that Trump and Sanders are both what the horse racing enthusiasts call morning glories. They show well in the morning, but they don't run in the afternoon. That is their early primary season strength. This is what the political professionals say, that you're not going to see Bernie Sanders in November of 16.
Yeah, I've also heard it described as a summertime infatuation.
Yeah.
So there
Howard
you
Dean.
Are. See, there you are, guys, doing exactly what I've said.
I am quoting, you know, political
of course, that's what people always do. They,
oh, that's right. Ignore the experts.
Well, they quote somebody else instead of saying it themselves.
Let's factor in something else. Bernie Sanders, Hillary Clinton, and all of the rest of the Democrat, the Republican candidates are getting much less coverage than they might have gotten were it not for Trump. I mean, Trump is has been the story of the political season.
That's true.
And to the extent that on air or cable programs divvying out their time, their political block is essentially Trump and then the rest of the world, not the rest of the political world.
Yeah. I think that's absolutely right. This, you know, people always talk about the summer doldrums, how in August when Congress leaves Washington, stories get inflated because there's got to be something for the political reporters to cover. And actually, Donald Trump is the guy who has filled the vacuum of the August doldrums in news coverage.
He has been a godsend for the cable networks.
Hmm. All right. It's the Media Project from Northeast Public Radio. If you're just joining us, Alan Shartok, Ira Fussfeld, and Rex Smith here. You can offer your comments. media@wamc.org. That's email. And we will read some of your thoughts here on the radio if you like. media@wamc.org. It is worth noting, speaking of the presidency, that the current administration has received a lot of criticism from the mainstream media for being hostile to accessibility, to transparency. The latest of this being 50 journalism and open government organizations are working together, pushing the Obama administration to loosen restrictions on public information. This is the deal. There's a letter to the president that has gone out expressing concerns about restrictions placed on White House staffers and their communication with journalists. And of course, you know, in the state of New York, we see this in the intense control over messaging that is held by the governor's staff in the form of Andrew Cuomo's people and all the agencies, so that a public information officer can't even return a phone call to a reporter without getting a green light from the second floor of the state capitol where the chambers look.
But of course, to be fair to both Andrew Cuomo and President Obama, let me just say, reporters are always saying more, 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 more. And
isn't that a shame?
Well,
acting on behalf of the public.
I'm not. Oh, it's always acting on behalf of the public. But really, Ira, it's acting on behalf of themselves. You know, they say they're acting in behalf of the public, but I don't remember anybody ever holding up their hand and electing you guys as our representatives.
Only when they plunk down their butt to buy the paper.
Well, you used to say they elect us each day with their quarters.
They're plunking it down a lot less, I can tell you that much.
Well, that's because we're giving a lot of it away for free. I want to know what you think. I want to know if you believe the principle that the Obama administration has been among the most restrictive and anti-press of any administration, some say dating back to Nixon.
Ira, they have said that about every single administration, including the Bush boys and Nixon and everybody else. They have always said that because they want more and more and more, and I don't blame them for wanting.
Did they say it about Clinton?
Excuse me. I am for openness. I am for reporters being allowed to mine their stuff. But I also think there is always something so self-serving about you people and what you do.
You people.
So
piggyback. What's your reporters piggyback on what you people get out of the government? Then that's fine. Thank you, Alan.
Rex and I are on the same page. If one of your people comes out of your newsroom and walks into your office and complains about being stonewalled by government,
I get on the phone and I yell at somebody.
Yeah, and you're not happy about it, and you believe that your reporters, acting on behalf of themselves and the public, deserve the right to know whatever it is that they're looking for.
That's correct.
So where is the argument?
There's plenty of argument. There's plenty of argument in that everybody who's listening now knows that there are a lot of reporters out there who are interested in gotcha journalism. And we have seen that again and again.
That's a cheap shot.
No, it isn't a cheap shot. It's just the way it is. And I'm sure that everybody will be writing in and saying, Rex Smith, we resent your telling Shartok he did a cheap shot.
What does gotcha journalism have to do?
Well, you're the president of the United States, or you're George Pataki, or you're this guy, that guy. You're saying, wait a second now. If they're going to do gotcha journalism, and if not going to be behaving in a professional way, then we're not going to give them the access they want.
Sounds like John Adams.
What's gotcha about seeking out information to determine whether or not there is in fact something to report? If you suspect something and then you can't get the information to prove it, then you're left for speculation journalism.
Confess, I say, confess.
Oh, boy. Correction of the week. We end the program with the correction of the week. It's from the Times of London, which had an important correction involving Pope John Paul II. That is, Karol Wojtyla was his name. Here is the correction, read in its entirety. Karol Wojtyla was referred to in Saturday's Credo column as, quote, the first non-Catholic pope for 450 years.
That's pretty funny.
Oh, boy. Of course, he was the first non-Italian pope for 450 years. We apologize for the error, the Times of London says.
That's funny. That is really
funny. Was the pope Catholic?
Does a bear walk in the woods?
Walk in the woods. Thank you, Alan. Cleaning things up for the public radio audience, as always. Alan Shartok, Ira Fussfeld, and Rex Smith, thanks for joining us this week on The Media Project.
Hold the press, extra, extra, read all about it. It's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. Like the richest girl who could not bake a cake. Ting-a-ling, ting-a-ling, ling-a-ling, ling. Now, newspapermen are such interesting people. They used to work like hell just for romance. But finally, the movies notwithstanding, they all got tired of patches on their pants. They organized a union to get a living wage. They joined with other actors upon a living stage. Now newspapermen are such interesting people. when they know they've got a people's fight to wage. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, newspaper guild, got a free new world to build. Meet the people, that's a thrill, all together fits the bill. Oh, newspapermen are such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the guild. Now, publishers are such interesting people. Their policy is an acrobatic thing. They claim to represent the common people. It's funny, Wall Street never has complained. Ah, but publishers have worries, for publishers must go to working folks for readers and to big shots for their dough. Now, publishers are such interesting people. It could be prostitution, I don't know. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, circulation, ting-a-ling-a-ling, advertising, get those readers, get that payoff. What a headache, what a mess. Oh, publishers are such interesting people. Let's give 3 cheers for freedom of the press.